Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Miro Kranz with versioning and releasing an application composed of REST microsystem. Please welcome the speaker.
All right, guys. We are here today to learn about versioning and releasing an application composed of REST microservices. I'm going to be explaining to you the pieces of the problem. First off, how we came to want to solve this problem. Then I'm going to take the problem apart into its pieces. I'm going to describe several possible solutions to the problem. I'm not going to prescribe the solution to the problem. So we're going to go through some of the advantages and disadvantages of some of the solutions that I see to the problem. First, let me introduce myself. My name is Merle Kranz. I work for the MIFOS Institute. Just a second, I've got to get my speaker notes up. It's a nonprofit. We're funded by a man named Paul Meritz to work on a project called Apache FinnerAct. This is our logo. Apache FinnerAct is a piece of core banking software targeted at microfinance institutions. Microfinance is a branch which offers banking services to poor communities. Apache FinnerAct, in its origins, it started in about 2006, the current generation of it, is older than microservices. It's a so-called monolith. It's got a REST interface in front of a MySQL database. It's a pretty standard pattern. But it's one great big application, which is fine for smaller deployments. It actually makes it easier for small microfinance institutions to deploy this. And there is plenty of need for smaller deployments in our space. But not all of our users are small microfinance institutions. Some of them are larger service providers who offer hosting for multiple microfinance institutions. Some of the MFIs are not technologically savvy enough to run a web application. So these service providers are needed for this case, for these less technologically savvy users. Since FinnerAct is multi-tenant, we can support those use cases too. But unfortunately, our service providers have started running into scale boundaries of what you can do with a monolith. You've got database locking issues, and just when you want to scale up, if you have to duplicate instances of the entire application, it's unwieldy. And they are in a situation with their infrastructure that they can deal with microservices and would appreciate microservices. So we've started at the MIFOS initiative to break the FinnerAct application up into a landscape of microservices to perform the same purpose as FinnerAct does now. The first question we came up with in the community, and Roman is here, he can attest to this, was how are we going to release this? Once you have pieces, you still have to release the pieces in a way that users can deploy this. When we came into Apache incubation, we had decided we wanted to do heartbeat releases. Heartbeat releases are releases in a regular interval, just like what it sounds like. There are many advantages to heartbeat releases. They can create more excitement in a user community and in a developer community, and they can generate more trust on both sides. It's obvious how to do this with, well, it's maybe less than obvious, but it's easier to do this with a monolithic application because you just say, okay, once a feature is integrated, it's releasable. If it's not releasable yet, don't integrate it, and then we just draw out of the source base on a regular basis. But in microservices, it's maybe less obvious how to do this. Because when you're building microservices, you have more artifacts. The development of these artifacts may or may not be synchronized. In fact, it's probably not synchronized. It also may or may not be regular. So you might have one thing that has a regular development cycle and another thing where you just occasionally add features to it. So how do you capture this into coherent releases at irregular intervals? That's the question we're asking today. The picture gets even messier when services depend on each other. So some services might not be updated to deal with the newest versions of services on which they're dependent. And some changes might be introduced that are backwards incompatible so that they can't run based on older versions. And it gets messier again when the services adjust their underlying data structures. And these data structures have to be migrated from one version to the other. Now you have to consider data compatibility and migration too, all while, and this is the kicker, you want to be able to make it possible for your users to have 100% uptime. But, like many problems, this one becomes solvable if you take it apart into its pieces. So the first thing I'm going to do is go through some definitions. Some of you may be familiar with the space. I'm going to go with a short version of these definitions so that I don't bore those of you who are familiar with the space. Some of you may end up having to go look up some of this stuff. Start with a microservice. A microservice is elastic, resilient, composable, minimal, and complete. If you want to know more about a microservice architecture, Martin Fowler has a very good article online about this, as he has about many things. In particular, a microservice is responsible for its own persistence, and other services interested in the same information should acquire that information through the microservice's REST API, or its API in general if you're not using a REST microservice. But it should never go directly to the persistence. So always over the API, never over the persistence. This also makes it possible if you need to handle more load to spin up more instances of the same service in order to increase the capacity of your system. So REST is a client-server architecture. It's stateless and it's cacheable. Backwards compatible. Backwards compatible means changes which do not force a programmer to change or recompile consumer code or to migrate existing data. So changes which do not prevent a side-by-side deployment of the from and the to version for an upgrade are backwards compatible. Some examples of backwards compatible persistency would be adding an optional database field, making changes to a file format which do not prevent an older version of the same program from reading the file, or adding an optional field to a security token. Some API examples would be adding an optional request parameter or adding an optional header parameter. There are many more examples of backwards compatible changes, and there are many, many more examples also of, well, backwards incompatible changes. Incompatible changes do force a change in consumer code, or they do force data migration. They make side-by-side deployment more difficult, but not impossible. A persistency example might be removing a required database field or changing the file format from XML to YAML of some file you're saving, some configuration file. Some API examples of backwards incompatible changes would be removing an endpoint, or adding a required field to a request body, or adding a required header parameter. So most developers use versioning to describe the compatibility of their code. Code can be compatible or incompatible at its interface, or at its persistence. And it's generally versioned at the release artifact level. To reduce the complexity, we'll work with just one artifact-level version. And the persistence and API versions will be kept in sync. This is not something you have to do, but for this presentation, we'll do it this way. There are many versioning formats you could choose from. You can pick one and stick with it, but we've chosen semantic versioning. In semantic versioning, you increment the major version for backwards incompatible changes, for backwards incompatible API changes, the minor version when you add functionality in a backwards compatible manner, and the patch version when you make backwards compatible bug fixes. If you want more information, check out the semantic versioning website. They've got a complete description of this is semantic versioning. One of the advantages of a REST microservice architecture is that it facilitates 100% uptime even during an upgrade. This is achieved by spinning up new instances of the new microservice version while the old version is still running. Then, once the new version is up and taking on requests stably, you can shut down the instances of the old version. And this process is called A-B deployment. It's also called blue-green deployment or red-black deployment. There's a lot of names for it. I'm going to call it A-B deployment for this presentation. So now we have all the pieces. Let's start putting them together. First, we need to understand how users will upgrade deployments. Otherwise, we won't know how to put together release trains that will help them to do these upgrades. So I'm going to go through some upgrade scenarios in various degrees of difficulty. We'll start with the easiest one. This is a single microservice, single upgrade, a simple upgrade. Okay, so there are no backwards incompatible API changes, no backwards incompatible persistency changes in this case, and no dependencies on other REST microservices. So to do this, you create a new service artifact. Bing. And you A-B deploy that and let the old one go away. That's easy, right? Since version A functionality is a subset from version B functionality, there's nothing that will stop you from doing this. The consumer code will not be disturbed by the replacement of version A through version B in this case. So, next case, we get a little bit harder. Now we'll try a single microservice with an API break. This is a breaking change here. To do this, you implement the new API side by side with the old API. You increment the artifact's minor version here. Minor because it's still compatible, it's still offering a compatible interface. You A-B deploy that new artifact, let the old one go away. Consumer code can still talk to the old interface. Then you can optionally, you don't have to, but you can, A-B deploy another artifact which offers only the backwards incompatible interface. You can increment the major version and then spin down the older version. This has given your consumer code a chance to switch to the new API version, but still made it possible for you to do an upgrade to a backwards incompatible change. Another alternative, by the way, is you could just continue letting these two artifacts exist side by side. But that has a disadvantage. If you do that, then it becomes impossible to make API persistency changes in the future because these two won't understand the new persistency if you make persistency changes. If that's not a problem for you, then you can just go with that solution. All right, that wasn't so bad. So let's try something a little bit harder. Let's do backwards incompatible persistency changes. In fact, let's take the really hard version of this, where a microservice replaces its persistency with something fundamentally different. So we're going to take the case where, in celebration of the Geode graduation, we're going to take a case where we're replacing the SQL database with a Geode backend, a NoSQL database. So we're going to create a new REST service artifact. And this new REST service artifact is going to continue to write to the old database so that requests that get served by the old one can still be served correctly. But it's also going to start writing to the new NoSQL database. This service also has to start up the migration. So this service would have to be responsible for the migration. An alternative, you could create a new artifact that is alone responsible for the migration. I'm just going to use it with the simpler case here. And then you create a new REST service which only writes to the new persistence format. And you can A-B upgrade to that version. You can only do that after the migration is complete, of course. Now you have a situation in which the new artifact is only talking to the NoSQL database. You may have some legacy data here that you have to track for auditing purposes, but if you're lucky, you don't need to keep this, so do what you have to do with that database. But now you have a situation in which the service is talking to your new persistency. Now you'll notice that I only increased the minor version here in this case. The reason I did that is because the API is still the same. It doesn't matter to the consumer code, which I haven't drawn here yet. It doesn't matter to the consumer code what I did under here. And the consumer code may be declaring its dependencies based on the major version. That's the reason I did it that way. That may not be the right solution for you. So now we've examined the microservices in isolation. Now I'm going to take it up one more level. Let's see how upgrades work with dependent microservices. So you have multiple microservices, some of them dependent on each other. And they're using each other's functionality, and you want to do an upgrade. In this case, blue, I'm going to call this microservice blue, provides functionality that purple is dependent on. And purple is using it over the interface, because remember, the microservices are not talking to the database of the other microservice. They're talking always over this interface. So what we're going to do is imagine the scenario in which purple has a new feature request. We want to create a new feature in purple, but purple needs new functionality from blue in order to solve this feature request. And we're going to imagine that this functionality on both cases can be solved in a backwards compatible manner. So what do we do? Well, we're going to create a new version of blue. Again, we upgrade the minor version because it's backwards compatible. We're going to A/B deploy that. And then we're going to create a new version of purple. Again, we upgrade the minor version. It's dependent explicitly on at least this version of blue. And we can A/B deploy that. And we're done. Because the changes are backwards compatible, a new version of other microservices that I didn't draw here is not necessary. They can continue to use this interface. Or if they want to take care of the new, take advantage of the new functionality, they can upgrade too in a rolling manner. So if there's also another service here that's dependent on purple, then we could upgrade it, and we would just continue rolling on up to the top of the dependency tree. So now let's see how upgrades work with dependent microservices when API changes are backwards incompatible. Again, purple is still dependent on blue, but now we have a feature request that requires backwards incompatible changes in blue. So what are we going to do? So we're going to start by creating a new version of blue in which we increment the minor version. We're incrementing the minor version because we're still supporting the old interface. We're also going to support a new interface that's backwards incompatible to the old interface. Then what we do, so we A/B deploy that. We're still good. Now we create a new version of purple's artifact with an increment in the minor version, because purple is still compatible here, that uses the new version of blue. I'm going to A/B deploy that. And then if we want to, we don't have to, but if we want to, we can create a new version of blue with an incremented major version, which deletes the old functionality, the functionality that it's now incompatible with. We don't have to also deploy a new version of purple to go with that, but we don't have to. So that was the backwards incompatible changes on multiple microservices. Now we're going to do backwards incompatible persistence changes. That was the API changes. Now we're going to do persistence changes. So as long as there's no API change involved, upgrades of a REST service with changed persistence can be handled exactly like REST services, as though the REST services were isolated. So it doesn't matter whether the persistence is backwards or incompatible in this, persistence is compatible or incompatible in this situation. There is one caveat here, and that is that you have to that they don't allow for side-by-side deployment, even though they're in the same major version. So what you do is, we've seen it before, we have two things. We have blue and we have purple. Purple is dependent on blue. We upgrade blue, increment the minor version. We do the migration that I described in the previous slides, and then let the old blue die out. And then we upgrade purple, increment the minor version, and we're done. It doesn't actually to purple, it doesn't matter what blue is using as a persistency. So now we understand the deployment problem that we'll be presenting to our users. Let's take a look at the possible solutions to the release problem. So if you remember, this is the landscape that we're looking at, with the unsynchronized release rhythms of our various services and the unsynchronized dependencies between the various services. Now, I've only drawn three here, but remember that that if you're doing a REST microservice architecture, it's not just to make three microservices. You're probably going to have 10, 20. There are deployments out there with hundreds and hundreds of different microservices working together. So the first solution I'm going to describe is what I call the whole landscape solution. In this solution, the contributors have to adjust the entire landscape of the code when they decide to make breaking changes. So what happens in this case is this, with all of these somewhat chaotic dependencies, becomes this. You're saying, okay, developers, it's up to you to upgrade your consumer code to the latest version every time a change is made. And what that means is every time you make a change, you have to upgrade the version. There are some advantages to this approach. That is, the contributors have to know their way around the entire code base, and they have to understand the impact of their changes, so they can't throw something in there that somebody else is going to have to suck up and suffer over. Those are definitely advantages. It's the eat your own dog food principle. Another advantage is the latest features are always in the release, and release cycle management is very straightforward. There's not a lot to think about. You just say, okay, this is my version, and then this is my version, et cetera, on up. There's some disadvantages to this, though, too. Feature development is going to be slower, because the larger the number of dependencies between the services, the more you have to think about to create a new feature, and you have to think about it all at once. Another disadvantage is some users, don't need all of the microservices. Some of the users might just need some of the microservices, and they're going to have to wait for all of the microservices to be updated, even though they only need functionality in a certain subset. Another important disadvantage of this, especially in an open source development environment, is that we're requiring our users to be familiar with the entire code base. That makes your learning curve very steep, and that can discourage new contributors. But that's not something we want to do at an open source project. We want to make it as easy as possible to make your first changes. The other thing this doesn't do is it doesn't take full advantage of the microservice-bounded context. And what can happen in a situation like this is people succumb to the temptation to not talk to the API anymore, but to talk to the underlying database structures. But if you have a single repository, if you're putting all of your microservices in one repository, this is probably your only option. And it will work. But let's look at some other solutions. Those are your releases. Another solution is that we just take the newest version of every service. We say releases are composed of the newest version of every service. I don't care what the dependencies are. So this becomes this. Oops. Doesn't look good, does it? This would mean that we're creating releases of services that don't work together. This is not very user-friendly. This is not something we want to do. The advantage is the latest features are always in every release. But I don't think that's much good if the software doesn't work. Release cycle management is also very straightforward, but we're not just doing this for us, right? So let's look at the other solutions. That, by the way, is the only solution that just doesn't work straight out, the last one. This is the individual release cycle solution. So we say each microservice, all by itself, is released alone. For just a few services, this might be a reasonable solution. So this would become this. Just put a serve, that's a release, that's a release, that's a release. And when it's done, you release it. This is actually fairly straightforward and comprehensible, but it means you're going to be doing a lot of release checking in your release management. Advantage, the latest features are always in every release. As soon as you have this version, the features that were checked in between there and there, they're there. And the same thing here. But this is going to mean your users have to understand these here. Your users are going to have to understand the dependencies. That could end up tempting us to put out things that are very hard to deploy or even impossible to deploy. We don't really want to make this the user's problem. If you're going to do it this way, then you better document those dependencies so that users know what you're putting out. One more possible solution is the sum but not all microservices solution. So each release in the solution contains certain core critical services. You say, these microservices are the ones I always want to release. I'll release the others if they match, but these are the ones I always want to release. So if the core critical services here were orange and purple, then that would mean that this would look like this. And you notice, in most cases, you release all of the software. If you have a case where the core service has one of the non-core services that's not dependent on it, then you just don't release it in that release. Now, if your users don't all need all of your services all the time, this can be a reasonable solution. It's going to give you a higher frequency than the next solution I'm going to show you, a higher release frequency. And if not all of your users care about that, then that's not a drawback that it's not in there. Advantage over the last couple of solutions is the user can take a release and use it if it includes the services they need. They don't have to think about whether things work together. They can just use it. The latest feature and the most central components are always in there, just as a repeat. Another advantage to this is the developers can work more independently of each other. So the developers who are working on this don't have to suddenly jump on making their calls to Orange compatible. They can continue working on what they're working. They can do the change when they're ready. So it works better in a distributed development environment. So one last solution. In this last mode, the release contains some microservices and older versions based on the compatibility restraints. So I'm going to call this the compatibility restraints mode of releasing. The community would identify the maximum compatible version of each service, in this case, and compose a release out of those versions of those services. So back to our landscape again. This becomes, one little note just so you don't get confused soon. Remember that a patch version means that these are API equivalent and that these are API compatible. So actually, if purple is dependent on orange 1.0.0, then purple is compatible with anything with one in the major version. So this purple can be released with any of these. And that's the same point, for the same reason, this purple can be released with any of these. So that's going to become important. You'll see why soon. So what we're doing is we're going to take this version landscape. This is then our release landscape. And you'll notice, that's why I pointed out before, in this case, purple is released with the 2.1 version of Orange, even though it was originally programmed against the 2.0 version of Orange, because it's a minor version, and this is compatible with this. The advantages to this is that, again, just like the last one, the user can take a release and use it as it is. He doesn't have to think about, or she doesn't have to think about, whether or not it's compatible, because we as a community have made sure that it's compatible. Every release here includes all of the services created by the community. So if all of these services are important or critical, then this is probably the one that we want to use. This is probably the mode that we want to use. Developers can work more independently of each other. So again, blue, the developers who are working on Blue don't have to jump right on mapping this, but they can still get their code into a release. Some new features, which are already integrated, won't be in the release. So this right here, this version never made it into a release, and its features got into a later release because the compatibility isn't there yet. But release one more disadvantage is that release management requires an analysis of version dependencies. When you put together the release package, you have to think about what works with what. And it's even a little more complicated than it might be at first view, because if there's a database upgrade, if there's a data migration in here, then you have to make sure that any components that do your data migration are included in the release. What this means is that the community has to keep an eye on the dependency graph when it's designing migrations, and it has to keep an eye on migrations when it's designing the dependency graph. This is something that, as far as I know, there's insufficient tooling out there for, but this would be a good space, actually, for an Apache project to jump in on. So, are there any questions?
Thanks for the great presentation. My question is, I think we are sort of maybe not addressing an elephant in the room, which is when you say that they all connected and talk to each other. I mean, surely they do not just, you know, bind the socket and talk through the socket, right? You know, there is some intermediary that allows, you know, all of that sort of incremental upgrade. So could you talk a little bit about the intermediary between these services and what are the requirements for that?
Well, okay. I sort of skipped over that part. These are REST interfaces. You can put a service discovery mechanism in between that. We're testing out on Pivotal Cloud Foundry, and we will probably be using Ribbon and Eureka, so in that context. So, yeah, and it's a problem that our environment solves for us, basically.
Do you recommend enforcing a certain API version within the service? I mean, by calling a get version or capability call?
Are you asking about the versioning mechanism, how you say which version?
I mean, you have a consumer which is compatible with a certain API version, and how do you avoid calling incompatible API by accident?
There are several possible solutions to that. We've chosen the solution where you put the version in the URL and make the call to that. It's also possible that you can put the version in the header. There are religious wars out there about which one to use, so my apologies in advance for the pissing contest you'll find when you go do the search on that one.
I saw if you make breaking changes to your API, your new API must be included in one of the previous versions so they can migrate. How does it work practically in your team? Because if you want to introduce new functionality, you usually go to a major version, but your API also has to be available in the previous version, so you release them at the same time, or how do you do that?
What you're going to do is create a new REST controller for the new API, but include both REST controllers. And since your backend, your persistency stays compatible in that case, and that still works.
So your new API is actually already finished in the previous version that
right.
You are going to use in the next one.
So if we look back at this, if I can find it. So that's this particular case here. Oops. So you've got your old API here. You introduce a new service that supports both APIs. And we solve this by saying, OK, we have one REST controller for this, and we have another REST controller for this. And we do the mapping in here. So they're both live in the same microservice. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it was more like the new functionality for the next version
has to
be implemented in the previous one, so you have to release a previous one before you can go to the next version.
Yeah, exactly. You have to do there's three steps. There's the existing state and then two steps. Yeah.
So you are applying everything on FinnerAct. So in FinnerAct, you are maintaining a graph of every dependencies of every service.
That's what
you have some documentation of this. I'm on the site. I don't see any list of services with dependency in the.
That's because you're looking at the previous FinnerAct. The new the re-architecting of Apache FinnerAct is we're currently working on it. Me and two other colleagues are currently working on it. We haven't put it out there yet. So.
Okay.
You're not going to find it yet. If you want to know when you'll see it, we're putting it out next March.
Okay. And then on the graph, you add the dependencies on versions, the version constraints. They are on the graph. The document, because there are dependencies between components, between services, and there are dependencies between versions. And it's another level of precision of dependencies. How do you model that?
Well, remember my answer to the question before that we call against the URL, that we design the URL to include the version. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we make a call against the URL with that particular version that we require, in that case. And,
And then you expect people who will be deploying FinnerAct. Will understand which part they have to deploy and to not avoid critical steps when upgrading and so on.
So,
whoa.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be probably one of the harder pieces. There are two kinds of users here. There are your more sophisticated service providers, and then there are your individual installations. For the more sophisticated service providers, I definitely expect them to be able to do this. It's documented, and this is the kind of thing you have to do when you're operating on a microservice architecture. But if what you want to do is to just run it on your laptop, which a lot of users are doing with Apache FinnerAct now, then we're going to have to put together a solution for that too. My personal preference is just to put it in a container and release the container. I think that running Docker is probably easy enough for most users that they can do that. But yeah, that's not a discussion we've actually had in the community yet, because we're not there yet.
Installing from scratch is not the easy part. Upgrading something existing is the hard part.
Yeah, and in that case, then we'll have to put together a migration Docker that takes their data and moves over.
I think in a way that's where my question was also coming from. So that's also where my question was coming from, because once you start talking about real production deployments, you're talking about a lot of plumbing that we're assuming, and you know, to some extent there are platforms out there that allow you to do that plumbing, or you can try to do it yourself. I mean, the choice is yours, but the more complex it gets, I guess, the more benefit you get from an already existing platform.
I have a question regarding the API breaking changes.
Yeah.
If you are adding a new required parameter, do you really have two REST controllers and they are supporting both versions in one WAR file?
It's the easiest way to do it, yeah.
Okay.
We don't actually have all that much logic in our REST controllers. But yeah, I mean, you're just going to copy the REST controller, add that one parameter, and then in the next version you can delete the old one.
Okay, so it means you have all the models with the breaking changes in parallel. So the client code has to look up which version he needs.
Well, the client code says exactly which version he needs in the call. So that's included in the URL that he's calling against.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Any further question? No? So thanks again, speaker.